Please be seated. I know I've told you this story several years ago, but it bears repeating. And besides, who in the world would want to preach on the Jeremiah reading that you just heard? Somebody asked me earlier, why are we reading that? Don't have a clue. But the story I want to share with you is about an article a friend of mine wrote in a local newspaper in Alabama some years ago after attending her son's graduation at the University of Alabama. The commencement speaker was a man named Ransom Wilson, who is an acclaimed flutist or flautist, depending on what part of Alabama you're from, who was a native of Tuscaloosa. And my friend was struck by the fact that the commencement address was a little unusual. Mr. Wilson didn't speak very much about himself or his own path to fame and glory. Instead, he talked about us. He talked about the world. And he asked the audience to imagine the world as a place of only 100 people. If the world had only 100 people, 30 would be white, and 70 would be non-white. If the world had only 100 people, 52 would be women, and 48 would be men. If the world had only 100 people, 30 would be Christian, and 70 would be non-Christian. If the world had only 100 people, 80 would be living in substandard housing, with plumbing and electricity just a distant dream. 70 would be unable to read even a simple form. 50 would be malnourished and go to bed hungry each night. If the world had only 100 people, one and only one of those people would have a college education. Those with a roof over their heads and a place to sleep each night, as well as something to eat each day, would be richer than 75% of the world's people. And those with some money in the bank or some spare change in a bowl on the dresser would be among the top 8% of the world's wealthy. Now, I guess on some level I kind of knew some of this, but hearing those numbers stopped me in my tracks. There are no value judgments in those numbers. No politics, no bemoaning slackers on the government payrolls. Those are just facts. And we like to pretend that we are the world, but the truth is we are such a small minority, primarily because of the accident of our births. So I guess that begs the question, who are you in today's parable? Now, if you weren't here for one of our Wednesday services, our new Wednesday services this past week, you missed out because both were wonderful and different, and there was a lot of enthusiasm and energy, and you need to make plans to attend those because you'll be blessed from it. But at both of those services, we discussed this parable. No sermon, just discussion. What strikes you in this parable? What bothers you? What does it mean to you? And that discussion was wonderful. And it was through that interaction that I realized that I was being led to a sermon this morning. The story of the rich man and Lazarus follows last week's story of a rich man and his manager. In fact, it's part of the same conversation Jesus is having with his disciples, but yet now he's brought the Pharisees in. And it seems that Luke is painting a picture of a Jesus that doesn't have much use for wealth. I'm not sure that's true. I'm not so sure Jesus is against wealth as much as he's against poverty. So both of these men die, but apparently go to different places. Lazarus is taken up with the angels. The rich man ends up in the torment of Hades. And there is a great chasm that separates them. And that chasm is unchangeable. Suddenly, the tables have been turned. This beggar finds himself seated at a place of honor at the table of Abraham and goes from this nameless, anonymous beggar person to the only person in one of Jesus' parables to actually be given a name. The rich man can't bring himself to address Lazarus directly, so instead he speaks to Abraham. He says, "All right, Abraham, I'm not used to this. I'm not used to this suffering, so send my boy Lazarus over with some water." Such arrogance. But Abraham says, "Sorry, I can't send Lazarus or anybody else over for that matter to help you. The chasm is too great." And that chasm, I think, is as much the point of the story as anything else. This chasm, this deep abyss, this dark gap that seems so final, so ominous, so frightening. It is what separates us from each other, and sometimes even from God. And I guess a good sermon would be to warn you all of that chasm, because it's something you want to avoid, no matter what. But I don't think that's the point either. Because folks, that chasm, is it really any different from what separated the rich man and Lazarus when they were alive? And that's worth considering. Because all of us on some level have experienced that chasm in our lives. Not necessarily because of wealth or even sometimes with the best of intentions, but it's a chasm that sometimes we create ourselves by how we see those who around us who differ from us. How invisible people can become when they make us uncomfortable. How easily we can denigrate those who have the gall to have a different opinion than we do. But also how sometimes we feel like that outsider Lazarus. We feel unappreciated sometimes, without hope or direction, in need of healing, or maybe just a simple acknowledgement that we exist. Now, on Wednesday night, I gave the group a little homework. The assignment was something that I always do when I'm studying one of Jesus' parables, and I asked the group to find themselves in the parable. Are you the rich man? Are you Lazarus? Could you be Abraham? Or maybe you're just one of the brothers on earth that the rich man wants to warn. And I encourage you to take the lectionary sheet home and to do the same. But then came the homework. Then switch characters. Become one of the other characters and see just how greatly the story changes. It's worth trying. And then decide what the parable can mean for you and not just what I say it's supposed to mean. Because you see, we are all those characters. There's a little bit of each of us in every one of them. We are all like the rich man in some ways. We live our lives. We often want better and more. We enjoy from time to time being a little self-indulgent. That's just human nature. And in and of itself, that is no sin. But we're also sometimes like Abraham, judge and jury rolled into one. And every one of us has at some time felt like Lazarus, poor beggars, dependent on God for what we need and what we believe we want. And so often a great chasm exists between what is and what we think should be. And maybe we can't cross that chasm on our own. But that chasm is no longer uncrossable. Ransom Wilson, in his address, he ended it by encouraging the graduates to go out into the world, the big global world, and to work to feed people, to feed their minds, to teach them to read, to teach them that they are lucky, that they are blessed, and that they should go past that luck and that blessing on to others. And then he ended by playing a few bars of a classical piece on the flute, and the notes changed suddenly into Yay, Alabama, the fight song, and there was laughter and there was applause. And maybe, just maybe, some of those graduates did go on to do something. To feed a world that can't possibly begin to understand them when it hungers for so much of what you and I take for granted. And that is our call as well. You and I are not condemned in this parable because we are the wealthiest people in the history of the world. You and I can never heal the hurts, right the injustices, and defeat the indifference of the world by ourselves. But you and I can look at the world around us a little differently. And that's all I think the rich man ever really needed to do. To look at the world with new eyes, with eyes of gratitude for all that we have, with eyes of compassion, with eyes of mercy, with the eyes of Christ himself. And then be able to see the world differently, to understand the world as a much bigger and more complex place than this little strip of beachfront. To understand that everyone is not like us, to understand how blessed we are, to come to know that every person is real, has feelings, has a story, and is who they are for a reason. And to remember that a parable is just that, a parable, a story. It is not a prediction. And to know that because of where we find ourselves in the parable and how we respond, we, you and I, have the power and the opportunity to change the end of this story. God love you. Amen.